Oh, now that is crazy right there. I mean, that sounds like just someone walking through glass right there. That is crazy. Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat, and today I have with me Carl.
What's happening, Kat?
Hey, hey, and I have back again the Eric.
Whoa, the Eric, the genuine article, you might say.
That yeah. is it.
Oh, dear.
And today we're going to discuss Dread and Looper together. Once again, no, not once again. Okay, anyway. First, we're going to talk about Dread, the movie that came. Now, we've talked about Dread on this podcast before, but it was the movie Judge Dread. And I took a little bit of heat for kind of liking that film because my first time seeing it was, what, maybe 6 months ago? Maybe 9 months ago or so. I don't know. And I was like, oh my God, this is so great. I love the costume, blah, blah. And then everybody was like, that's not like the comic book. He took his helmet off. And B, it was crappy and blah, blah. I think Carl was one of those haters.
Oh, yes. I was a big hater, but go on.
No, that was it. So he said that he did not want to see that movie because it was, what was it? It was the big 80s style over the top movie that you just didn't want to see.
That's right. That's right. And, I get into it more, but that's true. Yes, go on.
Okay. Well, I wanted you to kind of elaborate on that
what?
A little bit.
Well, okay. Well, simply, like I think we covered this in the past podcast where there was just this window of sort of like early to mid 90s films where they were trying to reproduce the old comic book scale and look and feel, but they hadn't quite gotten the computer graphics down right yet. So it was like they had to make up for what they couldn't do with effects with really big, bad acting and crazy looking costumes. And Judge Dredd is the perfect example of that, where the effects are just almost there, but not quite right. And the acting is, oh, just, and come on now, you know, Rob Snyder, you got to really like him to like Judge Dredd. I mean, if you don't like Rob Snyder, Judge Dredd is not your film.
Wasn't he in Total Recall? Or, yeah, he was a cop in Total Recall. Look, I think.
I was not
from a filmic
fan.
Or maybe he was, no, he was in Demolition Man, I'm sorry.
There you go. That sounds
yeah,
right.
He was okay. In Demolition Man.
Okay. From a historical film point of view.
Oh, just, dear.
This just occurred to me right now because we've talked about this before. But to put it another way, it kind of reminds me of these larger-than-life like comic book action epics of the late 80s going into the 90s. In a weird way, to me, it kind of mirrors the big Bible epics, the sandal movies of like the 50s. Because there's really great examples. I mean, there's some good ones in there. Everyone knows Ben-Hur and Ten Commandments and all that.
Yes, yes.
But they started this crazy trend in Hollywood at the time where everybody wanted to do it and everything had to be bigger and badder and crazier and they would just spend all this money. And then you had like these colossal flops like Cleopatra and whatever. And there's others that
what?
Many
Cleopatra
we haven't
heard. Cleopatra was good.
And there's many that we haven't heard of that just were so expensive and so over the top and that failed. And unfortunately, like, I think, like, Batman in 89 really raised the stakes for mm-hmm. some of these movies and made other studios go, yeah, we want some of that action. And I know people are going to be divided on which ones they like and don't like because, like, one easy example is, like, Dick Tracy.
Yes.
And some people think that's just incredibly misguided. And there's some people who just think, whoa, that was crazy good for them to spend so much money on something so gigantic but yet completely off the wall. It's crazy. Excess.
You got it. That I forgot. Yeah, Dick Tracy is another good example where, you know, it was like the design and the costuming of it was so big, but the story and the acting was just not there. It was just non-existent. Batman and Robin, that's another example. You know, where, you know, again, you got the hugeness of everything that was supposed to be happening in it, And there was just this wafer thin story, you know, just trying to hold it. It was just, oh, it was just non exist. Oh, and Schwarzenegger, I think he just come off his heart attack. So he was even more stilted than normal with his acting. It was just, oh, it was just, oh.
Okay, fine.
So that's just Dredd's just dead center and all that kind of funness. So, yeah.
Well, I didn't want to see it when it first came out. I remember hearing how bad it was from everybody else. But then because the new movie came out, I gave it a chance and I was like, oh my God, I love the set style. It reminds me of the old stuff. I can't believe I haven't seen this. This is awesome. And I don't know, I just liked it because it was that goofy 80s thing that I kind of liked about it. And it had Stallone in it. And I don't know, I just kind of enjoyed it for that. I didn't know anything about the comic book at all. So him taking his helmet off, big deal. Whoop. Whatever. But everybody is just, you know, you're wrong because, you know, and I accept that. So the new Dredd is supposed to be more accurate or more true or closer to the comic book. And so I was curious to see what that looked like. And this is the reason why I saw Dredd. Eric was excited about Dredd. I kind of had to twist Carl's arm.
Kinda.
Wow, that sounds a little.
No, all right, go on.
No. I just don't understand the hate. Let me tell you.
Yeah, what got me really excited, you know, was just it coming out a week earlier in the UK, which apparently is like the home of Dredd, his home turf, as far as fans is concerned. I have a lot of friends over there in the UK, and you know. To a T, they were unanimously emphatic about it. Like they absolutely 100% on board, and that's kind of like what pushed me that week running up to the release here. Was like, okay, wow, it seems like this is something I may have to look into.
So the consensus over there is that he was really accurate and the movie was on point.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. They were like, woohoo! Like there was not a single person of my circle of friends who had anything bad to say at all about it.
That's interesting. So let me see. Well, let me start off with the thing that I liked about it the most, which is also a complaint. If you listen to Eric's podcast, Prognosis Negative, you'll hear me kind of repeat the same thing. But I think the 3D, while it was beautiful, it was a bit gratuitous. It was a lot of it. And it seemed like the movie was kind of geared to show how pretty the 3D effects could be with the blood out of the man's face and the gut shots and the slow motion blood. Like we've seen that in 300. It's okay. It's kind of disgusting. But then it kind of looks stylized at the same time. So I kind of got past it. It's like actual guts and stomachs exploding and just looked at the artistry and beauty of what's happening with the human body when it, you know, explodes.
It also profiled just how cool it is to do drugs. So, you know, that was really nice too, to have that in.
Well, they had really.
As soon as you take your coked out inhaler, everything turns into rainbow bright or fireballs. You know,
be fair, I do have experiences somewhat similar to that, being completely drug free in my life.
Oh, wow.
Just saying. So, I do have surreal moments.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the story itself, I don't know. It was okay. Dredd, you know, I have a thing about Carl Urban. I'm just not into him. He doesn't do anything. I can't figure out why. I mean, it seems like he has everything there, and I should like him. I should think he's hot, but I just see him, and he looks like a saltine cracker or something like that. It's just like, I'd rather have a Ritz, or I'd rather have a chocolate chip cookie, or, you know, a lemon bake, or something like that. But he's just like, let's eat some bland soup and get some saltines. And
I've never disliked him in anything.
Yeah, I didn't like him as Bones. Really? I wasn't a fan. I wasn't a fan. Like, every time I watch Star Trek, I like him a little bit more. But the initial response to him as Bones, no way. What's her name? The Lena?
Yes, Headley? Hetty?
Yeah, whatever her last name is. I like her. I don't know. Something about this movie, it's just it was okay. Would I buy it? No. Would I watch it again? Eh. If I'm drunk, maybe.
Definitely watch it again.
But I'm not sure it was my favorite film. Now, Carl, I know Eric kind of has. What made you like this film? What excited you about it? And how is something that you're going to buy and you're going to rewatch? And what gets you, there?
Well, it was a bunch of things, but as has been said by many other people, not just me, this movie really seems like the second coming of the Verhoeven films, or if that is a genre of some sort. We were just talking about the over the top films from the late 80s and 90s, but there are also these like really gritty, yeah, with gratuitous violence to be sure, but more gritty, black humorish, dark humorish type films like RoboCop and the original Total Recall and a few other things. And there hasn't really been anything like that off the top of my head, like in the last 10 years or so. And this seems like a modern interpretation of that. And it really works in a way that the Total Recall reboot or whatever you want to call it was not really a return to form in any such way. This film was more what I was hoping the Total Recall reboot might be. And aside from all that, the other thing I like is, me being more reinvigorated in the comics in recent times, aside from the superhero stuff, I really do like a fair amount of like independent comics, which, again, not being focused on superheroes, are usually these types of alternative tales, somewhat grounded in a quasi-reality, but also with intense like violence or situations that tend to come out of left field but are not very censored at all in comic form. And while I have never read Dread before, this very much fits in that framework of what I expect in independent comics. And to see something realized that like that on the screen is really nice. I mean, I really like Sin City as well, the film, and it's really good. But
What was it
I'm
about the story that got you? Because it was, to me, it felt like it was
what I like about the story
just
is
a
that,
one-off story.
well, that's kind of what I like. I kind of like how we don't have to set everything up. We don't have to paint the picture. It doesn't have to be a quote-unquote origin story, which we all know can be really laborious. It just drops you into the action, kind of Star Wars New Hope style. And I kind of like that. And, like I'm happy to experience this, single adventure, and then perhaps have it have more backstory or whatever happened down the road. This is perfectly, I like just being right in it. Let's get on with it. Let's see what you got. I like what you got. All right, we're good. We can be friends. Like, let's keep this going. So, the self-containedness of the story, totally fine. Like, totally works for me. Like, it delivers. It delivers what I want. Is it my favorite movie of the year though so far? No, of course not. But
Oh, I was about to
really,
ask.
really worthy though. Really good, pastime. Really good diversion for a weekend. Like, I'd recommend it to a lot of people. Even, of course, to people who aren't necessarily into genre films or comic book films. It's just like if you just like this kind of like, wham bam thank you ma'am as far as like gore and violence is concerned, without being too gratuitous. I mean, it's not like dismemberment porn or like horror porn. No, it's nothing like that. But it just gets down to business and delivers, and I think a lot of people are into that particular segment, and it just works.
Okay. Now, Carl, I received an angry text from you, kind of upset with me that I requested you see Dread. And I was curious, like, there seemed to be some fury upon exit with you. So you got to break it down for me, because, like, I didn't hate it. It wasn't my favorite. It was okay. I wouldn't trash it, but you seem pretty angry.
Oh boy. All right. Now, to be fair, when the previews came out for Dread, the vistas, the effects, all that stuff, I did get a little excited at the time. I was like, well, okay, maybe I'll give it a shot, because the thing, my issue with those, you know, early 90s films is that it was like there was a nugget of something there, but it's like they didn't quite have the tools necessary to pull it off. And it would frustrate me because, you know, the budget or the story or it was just something that just didn't quite make it hit for those films. So when I saw, you know, the scope of what they were able to do with the effects and the previews, I was like, all right, okay, finally. Now we're going to get to see, you know, this world of the future of Dredd in a way that's a lot more fleshed out, that's a lot more interesting. So I walk into this, and I got my 3D. So, yes, I did see it in 3D. Got my 3D glasses on, and I start to watch. Now, the first thing that bothered me is that I'm trying to be – all right. When I'm watching a sci-fi film, I like to see new things, and I like to see a certain scale of things. When you're taking me into the future, you're taking me to this bold, exciting, you know, almost Blade Runner-looking city. There's so much to do, so much to see, so many possible places you can go. So I'm ready. I'm like, all right, take me to the city. Let me see, you know, what this world is like. The entire movie is basically set in the hallways of a project. Now, come on now. The whole movie... it's in the hallways of the projects is what's going on. Now, it's shot on a red. I got 3D glasses on here. Bullet time, you know, drug shot. All of this is in hallways in somebody's apartment. I'm going, well, where's the future? Where's I was at least expecting the flying cycles from Judge Dredd. You know, just at least, you know, give me something. No, we're meandering around the hallways for the whole movie. So I said, okay, when I see that's coming, I'm like, all right, well, at least, you know, they're going to give me a villain that I can really get behind, you know. I mean, because basically, this is like New Jack City, right? So, okay, villains own a building downtown, everybody's in it. All right, I like New Jack City. All right, give me some villains that got some attitude, got some organization, it's got some real drive and motivation. And then when we saw a girl step out, and I saw that she was going to be the villain, I said, uh-oh. No. Because, listen, I have liked her in many things. There's nothing wrong with Lena. But for her to try to put on this really dark, angry, kind of, you know, masochistic leader, I wasn't sure she could pull it off. Fortunately, she had the big scar, so that really adds to the acting experience.
And you know? The terrible teeth.
It's got the bad scar and the terrible teeth. You know, yes, but I said, oh, no. So, okay, now we're running around the hallways of the projects. Now we got Lena as our master masochistic leader. And I just kept, I'm going, well, okay, okay, well, now we got our hacker guy. All right, they got a hacker guy with the bionic eyes. This is going to really, you know, something's going to be kind of fun and dark about that. No, you know, he's turning off lights and he's locking doors. That's business. Or that was it. It just kept getting more preposterous. Okay, so listen. There are things that I liked about the movie. It was pretty. I'm gonna tell you that. Just, yeah. You know, what I saw, there was eye-splitting crispness of, you know, again, it must be the reds as well as, you know, the shot on red, as well as the, you know, the cinematography. It really, really was pretty, which is what made me so mad that the only thing that we're looking at is the walls of the projects. You know, I want to see something big. Take me outside at least. Give me some, you know, some vistas or something. So, no, okay, so we're all inside the projects. That's fine. All right, well, maybe the character. So we got Judge and we got his trainee coming in there. They're going to be interesting. You know, that's going to just really, you know, spark up something because sometimes if you don't have, you know, the scope of the environment, if you don't have lots and lots of special effects and all that, sometimes just the buddiness of a cop film could be good enough. You know, seeing those two going back and forth and cutting up. So I'm like, all right, give me that. So we got our psychic, you know, trainee, and then we got Judge Dredd. Judge Dredd spoke probably about two pages of dialogue the entire movie. Wasn't that Yoda-esque Zen-like deep stuff either, you know, where it was just like the nuggets of wisdom were falling out of his mouth. No, It was tough, like, yeah. You know, that was it. I was killing me. And now let's talk about the psychic abilities now, all right? I kind of thought that I like psychic stuff, you know, and it wouldn't done. Okay, good. We're going to see something cool with her. You know, the holodeck moments that she had with the criminal guy that she's dragging projects for 3/4 of the film. That was, you know, kind of interesting. But, you know, why didn't she wear her helmet?
Because it interfered with her psychic abilities.
Yeah.
Okay. So later in the film, how is she able to read the other judges' minds?
No, it interferes with hers, not the other ones.
Oh, so as long as it's not on her head, she
right.
can read other people's helmets.
Yes.
It's on her head, she can't read it.
Well, now that you say it, it doesn't make any sense, but it made sense when I was sitting in the film.
It still makes sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't ask. I didn't think to ask the question because there were so many other ridiculous things, but I didn't think that hard on that one.
Plenty of other ridiculous things. There are plenty of other ridiculous things. Now, let's talk about the weaponry. All right, now, I really liked, you know, Dredd's, you know, Siri gun.
The gun was better in Judge Dredd.
But he's talking to the gun, and he's, you know, yelling out the different devices or weapons, you know, packages. I thought that was kind of cool. When Lena and crew, looking for the judges, breaks out her set of miniguns, all right? What was it, like 3 miniguns she had just had lying around, of course. 3 miniguns that levels an entire floor of the building.
I like that.
It was pretty. It was preposterous. Because, of course, killed everybody on the floor except Dredd. I mean, just what?
Well, then, you know, that's the only part about her as a bad guy that I really enjoyed, because it gave me what I wanted as far as her being evil, because she was going around being meek and nonchalant, and I was like, this is a bad guy, really? She shank a guy's balls off, and then that's it? That's, you're the bad person or whatever? I'm not going to say that, but that's just not enough for me. So to see that she wanted to be quiet, Eric. I just wanted to see her do something evil, because she was just not. She was taking milk baths and stuff like that, and I was just like, dude. So this gunshot where she killed everybody, regardless of, it really showed that she didn't care. She didn't care about anybody. She wanted Dredd dead. And I like that she would kill everybody on that floor just to get what she wanted. And then you can really see more into her psyche and why she needed to die at the end. So I like that.
From a visual standpoint, the miniguns were pretty. I like that. But, you know, from a practical, she had whole, you know, mobs of folks. They could have just planted explosives. They could have just run up folks, but the miniguns, they were pretty, but still preposterous.
But they kept going within the circumference of Dredd, and he kept kicking their asses, so they needed something else, right?
Yeah, well, maybe that's why the miniguns were necessary. It was still I'm not a big fan. One little technical, you know, hiccup, because you know me, I gotta nitpick about some technical things.
Yeah. At least a planet didn't come into Earth orbit.
Well, listen, just about. But we'll let perhaps the folks who wrote this movie are unfamiliar with the concept of a dead man switch. All right? Because the entire finale of the film hinges on the fact that, okay, Mama, that's Lena's, you know, dark, what are we calling her? A pimp mama? What is she? What? Drug court?
I don't know, man.
Criminal. She slaps this you know, heart monitor, dead man switch on her wrist, which, you know, monitors her pulse. And, you know, as long as she's alive, the massive explosives that are hidden all throughout the building won't go off. So you can see the little light on it, you know, flashing while, you know, her heartbeat is going. So, you know, oh, we can't kill Mama, because if we kill her, the whole complex explodes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Judge Dredd's solution to this quandary: take Mama and throw her down the center hall, you know, down the center hole of this giant, giant building, because, you know, when she fell that far and that fast, then the switch on her arm signal would disappear, and she would be out of range from the antennas that would detect it. That were going to explode. That's what was going to blow. So, you know, he said, oh, wow, she's got a dead man switch on her. So I'm going to throw her really far, really fast away so that the signal on her arm doesn't broadcast the explosion when she dies. Right? I think that was his
yes.
thinking. Yes.
Not how dead man switches work. I mean, really, really, really not how they work. What happens is they send a signal until you die. So, you know, it doesn't make any sense because it like the whole danger of, you know, and power of what a dead man switch is completely defeated if you can just walk away from the explosions and then suddenly it doesn't work. That's what the whole darkness of it is. So, for the whole, you know, for him to solve this really interesting dilemma, I mean, you really could have done a whole lot of really cool stuff with this just by saying, we're going to throw her down a shaft. It was a complete anticlimactic, and of course she just falls. I mean, there's no explosion. There aren't people running out of the building. There's no heroic. No, she just falls, and that's it. And they're like, "Well, that's done. Now what next?" That is a complete waste. Really good. I mean, of course, it's just a blatant violation of how the darn thing works, anyhow. But it's just,
I know exactly what you're saying, like 100%, and I know what you're saying is true and accurate, and that's the way a dead man switch is supposed to work. At the same time, wasn't bothered. In the moment, I just figured, well, she obviously got the wrong kind of dead man switch.
Oh, dear.
Obviously was in the wrong aisle at Builder Square. Sorry, Home Depot. And the way you talked about how she just mopped up real quick, I mean, it's just, that's it, she's done. In a weird way, I kind of like that kind of dispatching, no nonsense way. In a weird way, to me, it's a larger version of the Joker getting rid of that guy with the pencil in The Dark Knight. It's just that simple quickness about it, except blown up into it being like the finale of this film. I kind of like it in that way, but I could totally see how to other people that would not feel as fulfilling. I see that as well. But I kind of like the simplicity.
I appreciate the visceral simplicity that Judge Dredd should be bringing to things. I mean, that you know, he's got big guns, he's shooting, he's killing everything that's around. You know, that is the you know, quote, fun part of his character and what, you know, was supposed to be the visceral nature of this film. But at the same time, you know, and I don't mind it, you know, as a gag or, you know, little parts of the film or whatever. But this is supposed to be the climactic ending. I mean, geez, where's my explosion? It's a Judge Dredd movie. Where's my big explosion? I mean, it was just none. It was just so small. That ain't good enough.
Sounds like you wanted the Judge Dredd movie.
Time, don't give me the rainbow bright version of it. All right, you know, I want to see something visceral and large. It was supposed to have been originally like Dredd. This was supposed to be bigger than what we saw before, and it didn't really feel bigger. And with all the time that's passed, and with all, you know, the special effects advances, the time they could have banged out a story in that meantime, you know, I was really expecting something bigger than what I'd seen before. And it didn't feel bigger. It felt like, it also, I mean, just the fact it was all in a project and everything, felt like a bottle show. It felt like everything was, you know, just neat and small and just very, if I'm paying to see a big motion picture, I don't want to see a bottle show. Not just that the story-wise was self-contained, but it felt claustrophobic. And that's, yeah, and not in a good way, like Aliens, you know, or something. But no. It was just disappointing all around. I just could not find a thing to really latch on to like about it.
Again, I pretty much agree with all of Carl's assessment just there. Like, we had the same read, just very different reaction to the same thing. Because if this does end up turning out to be a trilogy, that's the intention. But if it does turn out to come to fruition, I like my first parts of trilogies to come out like very low key, relatively speaking, and very self contained, and not to have all the explosions yet. Like I like the delayed gratification, if that makes any sense.
Not if you don't ever see the rest.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
That is true. I will be very disappointed if it doesn't work out. But
I don't think I'd see another one.
Oh God, absolutely, I would. Obviously, I mean,
because like I don't want to see the slow mo 3D thing again. I've seen it.
Well, I don't think we've done it
to death here. Like, what else would they do? Do they need such a gimmick in the next movie? Are they going to use the same gimmick?
Well, see, we disagree on the. I mean, it is a gimmick, but I felt that its use in this particular film was well done and well implemented. That being said, I wouldn't foresee that being in the sequels, because I doubt they'd revisit this slow-mo drug in any sequels, like, because that would seem to be a bad idea. And I don't think...
There's a lot of bad ideas in this film, so...
Well, yeah, but... Oh, not to me, but I just don't... wouldn't foresee them pursuing that, because it's they kind of tied those loose ends up, the slow-mo loose ends, with this particular story. I'd be surprised if they revisit that storyline. Well,
I don't know. I'd have to, you know, see if the trailer pulls me in. I mean, that trailer really didn't pull me in because of all the blood and stuff. And I was like, but I only saw it because pretty much seen every sci-fi movie this year. So why not? And that's the only reason I went. Like I said, I didn't hate it. It was like the people who were involved in the film should feel proud. They made a really good product, but it just didn't, you know, take me to my happy place.
It did me. Because I know I wasn't looking at my watch while I was in the theater.
Yeah,
I was never bored.
Well, when they did the Dead Man switch, yes, I noticed that too, Carl. But I just didn't care anymore after that. So I got to a point where I was like, whatever, I don't care. And then moved on. Because, yeah, that didn't really make any sense. And I was like, maybe I don't know something technically about the make and the model and the type of circuitry that they're using. So I'm just going to walk away and not think about it.
See, I didn't care either, but not with ambivalence at that point. I didn't care in the sense that, kind of repeating myself, but I just like, there's a certain kind of badassery that I like in certain films and anime and in comics, where it's just like, oh, look at me now, what are you gonna do? And then, like, I just, something I like. And yes, it's not always well done. And obviously we disagree if it was well done in this particular instance, but in this, for me, I was just like, I guess.
So what you're looking for is like when Indiana Jones was fighting that one guy and they were doing all this kung fu and stuff like that, and he just pulled out his gun and shot him.
Yeah.
Instead of bothering with the whole fight thing. I like that too, but that was much better than this falling off a cliff Dead Man switch business.
I mean, that was obviously a classic example you just brought up, but I mean, but yeah, it worked in the same way though. Because I was like, yeah, we're good. Take her out. It's all good. But
I don't know.
I just hope there's more. I hope there's more.
I don't know. He just didn't really have that thing. Like, I don't want to see more. I don't care.
Me either. Sorry.
And it's Carl Urban, so, I mean, I gave him his chance. Him wearing the helmet definitely helped, but I could still see his mouth, and I was just like, Carl
Urban. Interesting, because your reactions that you're describing to this film, that's another way of putting my reactions to the Total Recall reboot, which was like...
Well...
It wasn't torture or anything to watch.
And right.
There were things to pull out of it that were good, but... My feelings toward it, like, I felt no allegiance. I felt no desire to see more.
Yeah, I mean, I felt that way about Total Recall, too. Now, Carl, if you wanted to see You're Pretty, that's the movie you should have seen. But, yes, you would have complained about the story.
Yeah, there's
just everything about it you would have complained about. But I think we were pretty depressed on that episode.
Yeah,
Stephanie was like, oh, my God, it was so depressing. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I really was interested in hearing what Daryl had to say because he actually read the comic books, but he didn't see the movie, so I don't know.
But yeah, I'm definitely though interested to check out more in the comic form of Dread.
So Carl, if I ask you to see a second Dread movie, would you?
Not really.
I'm there. Oh, so there.
That is funny. Okay. Well, unless you have any last thoughts about Dredd, we can move on.
Question, just a quick question.
Okay.
What's the big deal about the importance of him keeping the helmet on? I mean, I've heard that, you know, there's some rants back and forth between the film that Stallone took it off and he has it on. What's the big deal about leaving the helmet on?
Well, I think on Eric's podcast, his guest Katrina just said that they wanted him to be a mystery, and even in the comic book he never takes it off, and even if shots of the past, like when he was younger, they'd show his face blurred or, you know, like shoulders down or something like that, and it was just a thing in the comic book.
Okay, alrighty.
I think the way they told the story is where his face didn't matter, it was just about the story or something like that, so I have no idea.
Yeah, it's just this, yeah, what she said. I mean, it's just, I guess, some kind of convention within the comic that we never, ever, ever, ever see his real face, no matter what. So, there.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I don't think it added a lot in this film for me. The fact that we couldn't see his face throughout it wasn't like a Vader-like mystery to me.
It wasn't as bad as Bane.
I wasn't aware of this, you know, supposed role seeing it, and I guess, yeah, it was kind of annoying, like, because I kind of would have liked to see his whole face, to be honest, or to get his full expression, but
I like that we saw his lips moving, so he was not like Bane in the new Batman or whatever, so I think it's fine if I don't see the upper half, but the lips moving is important.
Okay. Yeah. All right, just curious.
I don't know. Okay, so that's Dread. Please send all of your hate mail to Carl@RoboMinister on Twitter. And you can also talk to me there, and he'll answer those questions for you.
Yeah, I especially like the comment about a woman baddie being meh.
She was just, I don't know.
I like women bad guys. Catnip. You check the record of this, so
I guess because she wasn't like dominatrix bad. It was a different type of bad. So she wasn't stereotypical. But like, man, she wore like torn up t-shirts, bad teeth. Like, I don't know. Would you follow her if you were evil? Like, give me something to look at. If you're an evil woman, at least wear some really nice shoes. You know? I can tolerate it better.
Her shoes, girl, let me tell you,
that's women judged by women, you see.
Well, I'm just saying, if you're gonna bully me, be pretty about it, but whatever. So we are going to discuss Looper, the movie that everyone is saying is damn good. Wow, I didn't see this one the weekend it came out, but my Twitter feed was exploding with, it's so good, it's so awesome, you must see it now. And I saw it and I was pretty impressed. We're going to go around the table and see who saw it and see what they thought. Eric, no, you went first last time. Let's go, Carl.
I'm going to let Eric take the lead. Because
why is Eric taking the lead? You always give it to Eric. How about you? What?
Because he's got unique insights and in-depth things that I didn't always see. And I just really, really just like to really just dovetail off of the wisdom of Eric. So I follow.
Yeah, I feel like a corn on the cob getting buttered up. Oh, my goodness.
I'm so hungry. You sound great. Take a bite of you, Eric.
All right. Well, yeah, I saw Looper a week after I saw Dread, which was opening weekend for Looper. And as much as Dread was on my mind and I was liking it, seeing Looper just made Dread just completely fall away. Totally took a backseat. As I told you, Kat, before you even saw it, I think, about Looper, to me, it was one of those films that just kind of you don't expect, and it kind of comes out of nowhere. And the two most recent examples like that came to me would have been District 9 and Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Two movies that just absolutely were not anticipating at all, and just kind of was. It's not necessarily something you've never seen before, but it's definitely something presented to you in a new way, and it makes it seem fresh, regardless of if we've seen these elements elsewhere before. And I wasn't expecting it, and I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I did. And there's a lot of things I do like about it, aside from what is obvious about the story or the situation or the characters. There's a whole lot for me to sink into there. But yeah, for me, it goes without saying, thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it from top to bottom, and it's giving me a lot of food for thought after the fact, for sure.
I have to say that when I saw this, I didn't know really. The only thing I knew about it was the time travel element, and I've just fallen in love with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, because I don't know, he's grown up now, and he plays these really great characters, and he's just, I don't know, he's really good now. So I enjoyed seeing him in this film. Not a fan of the nose prosthesis, but yeah, and I don't really think it made him look any more or less like Bruce Willis. But, really? You know, he didn't look like Bruce Willis to me, young, old, or otherwise. So that didn't add to it for me, but it made him a different person in the movie. It made him not himself, Joseph. It just, you know how, like, you see an actor in a film and you're like, oh, this is this person, and you know this is this person, and you can still kind of see other mannerisms from a different movie into this movie or whatever. Well, he didn't have that because he felt like a whole different actor entirely. So I kind of appreciated that, or at least it felt that way to me. I did not expect the futuristic elements as they were. It reminded me a bit of In Time, Carl, the movie we saw with Justin Timberlake.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that it was modern and kind of post-apocalyptic, but not really. Also with The Surrogates, it was kind of like The Surrogates. And this is just one of those movies that Carl and I would watch per year, because they have one of them per year where they're kind of underground, gritty sci-fi that kind of no one sees.
Well, yeah, even that, what was the Bruce Willis one
from a Surrogates.
Couple of years? Surrogates.
Yeah, exactly. That's another one that seems that way for
right.
Me as well.
So this had Surrogates, In Time. This was like, I don't know, for some reason I kept thinking about Equilibrium.
Definitely I did too.
Yeah, yeah. And Repo Men, if y'all have seen that one.
That one I have not seen.
It's okay. So it just was, it's an instant favorite of mine, because, you know, and I really want a pretty future where everything looks like this Star Trek or whatever, but this to me felt like a more tangible future, like it could really happen, because it's sort of like what's happening with us today. We have all these fancy gadgets, but everything kind of sometimes is old and broken down.
Was it Dark Angel with Jessica Alba, the James Cameron TV series?
Yes, exactly. Yes, yes. So I liked it for that. And how many did either of you figure out the end before it ended?
I didn't.
I didn't figure out the solution per se. I didn't think it was that was necessarily going to be the solution. But as far as realizing what was going on with the kid and the Rainmaker business, that I saw really early. Really, really early.
Okay. Like, at what point did you kind of consider? Like, what was the scene where you're just like...
Almost right away when I first saw that little kid, and when Joseph Gordon-Levitt was, you know, hanging outside their farm. Like, almost right away, I just made that connection, like... Oh, it's a Rainmaker. Like, no, as soon as I saw the kid was not just a regular kid, like, right away.
No, when did you realize that kid was Joseph's character?
Oh, now that's... Now, I'm not sure about that.
What?
That the kid was Joseph?
Because I don't think that... No,
are you talking about Levitt?
That wasn't him?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Because I started maybe toying with that idea after I saw the whole movie, and I And I was questioning that, but I've kind of come to the conclusion that that's not the right direction to go.
Oh, well then, okay then. Because I walked out of the film thinking that that was all one person. Yeah. But then it doesn't make sense because he has no recollection of having that power. So, oh, duh. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, no, but I see what you're saying, though, because I started thinking it for a moment, you know, at the big reveal.
Yeah, I thought he was, too, because it was something like after they'd had sex and she was talking about how she left her kid. And then he had some stories that was similar. So I just automatically.
Well, actually, what also clouded it for me was that I started thinking he was like his own father. Like, I started thinking it was this whole crazy, like, Reese John Connor weird, except even more inbred situation. Because when the kid was talking about how he knows it's not his real mom, and he remembers being taken away and all this stuff, I started thinking he was recalling the flashbacks that we see of Bruce Willis in the future when he gets taken away from his wife or whatever. And
right.
And I thought the big secret was that Bruce Willis had fathered that child in the future with her, but he got kidnapped.
I didn't.
But then, like, sent to the past, and so then I was like, "Oh my god!"
Oh yes, no, I did think that because I thought that she was just a person taking care, and somebody from the the future had dropped him off. So yes, I thought that as well.
So I started thinking, somehow he's his own father. Like, this is a crazy paradox where he created himself. Yeah,
That's why I was started thinking, well, this is a lot like Oedipus. You know, and that he screwed his mom, and I thought that was his mom, so I thought he was having sex with his mom.
Yes, that's what I started thinking for a moment when my brains fell out of my ear.
Oh God! I guess I didn't. I'll have to see it again because I had a total misunderstanding of what happened.
But it's cool though. It's a cool idea.
Okay. Well, I still like the film, even though I was wrong about who was who or whatever, which is why this film is awesome, because it's crazy. So, Carl, you've been too quiet.
Yeah, I was contemplating the possibility of him being the kid being Joe as well. And I couldn't do it. I was just trying to say, well, maybe but I can't think that's happening there. So sorry, it took me a second to try to hang on to all of that.
I don't know why. I just assumed because the movie was kind of twisty and timey-wimey, and I was like, of course it would end, and that was be
watching
him.
Too much Dr. Who.
Right? And so, so I just assumed, like, why wouldn't it be him? And then I didn't actually think it through until Eric Starr was like, well, blah, 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 blah. I was like, oh, okay. So yeah, Carl, don't mind me.
Okay. All right. Well, no. Well, see, but that had me thinking. All right. I totally was expecting when I went to see this film, I was thinking it was going to be like Equilibrium was going to be that same ilk where it was the sleeper, and that's kind of how I went in. And especially, you know, Bruce Willis has a habit of supporting these, you know, little quiet films that you know pop up and are really deep and really smart. So that's one of the main reasons I like Bruce Willis a lot. So I'm very enthusiastic to see things that he's in. So I'm really going to need you guys' help. I did not like Looper. I really didn't like Looper. And I'm thinking there's got to be something that I have missed, or there's some piece of this, because
this
thing
feel
all
like
of,
a circus. This thing feel like our little movie of the year that we find.
All of that I was expecting. I was totally, and that's what I went into open-minded, and I was ready, and I was thinking that was going to be the case. And for some reason, this really, really, really did not hit it for me. And I looked at the Rotten Tomatoes review. So I'm like, there's got to be something I'm missing here. Because, okay, to me, it felt like three films kind of like randomly assembled together. Now, I'm not talking about the timelines. I'm talking about the feel of the pacing of certain parts of this film.
Yeah.
Just didn't feel like it all fit well together. I mean, the scenes of it, of course, being, you know, big, bold in the future, all that excitement happening. Then, you know, the Kansas farm, and then the
China.
Oh man, the Shanghai stuff. All of that it didn't quite feel like it fit well together. Now, when I watch a time travel movie, and I love time travel, that's the other thing, I love time travel movies. So I sit down, and from the beginning, my brain is on full record because I like to try to pick up, you know, the details. Oh, that's them coming back, or that means something significant. What I thought was really, really cool was that scene where Joe's friend from the future is trying to get the message to the door, and he's climbing over that fence, and you can see that the present day torture is breaking him apart in the future present. You know, yeah. While the paradox, you know, using the paradox as a weapon like that, really, really smart, really, really exciting. So I'm like, oh man, we're going to see more of that kind of stuff. You know, the scraping of the arms, that's a really powerful plot component. And I was really excited to see that. So when it never came back again,
it did.
Other than the little gag about, you know what I'm saying, that the other girl's name was shorter in the bar, that did not come back in the film.
Oh, you mean come back in a meaningful way?
In a meaningful way. Yeah. You know, so to bring that out, I was like, oh, okay. But you know, there's more things. I mean, the use of telekinesis, right? Other than getting to see the moment with the hydraulics special effects kicking in, because you know hydraulics has made some of our favorite films. They've got some awesome special effects, but they're also the ones behind Skyline. But I'm letting it go. So the one moment. The one moment where, you know, they implode Cromartie. Oh, by the way, you guys noting the theme of Sarah Connor Chronicles tonight?
I know.
We got Lena Headey.
He's a Terminator. He's going to be evil.
Yeah, we got Lena Headey on the first one, you know, who's Sarah Connor. And now we've got her Terminator Cromartie coming by as Gunslinger Rex or whatever that guy's name is.
Yeah, we're talking about his time travels.
And his time travels. Will Cromartie ever be in a decent time travel movie? I don't know.
But he has been. Delivered, yeah. Signed, sealed.
Yeah, well, that's one that's coming in the future, I believe. I'm holding up. So with telekinesis, right? Okay, we got telekinetics. I am looking for a reason. I'm looking for why that is cool. You know, just in the whole arcing part of the story, why is that important to the story? Why is that really cool? The bulk of the effect that we saw is people spending quarters in cigarette lighters with their telekinesis. All right. And so I'm going, all right, fine. I kind of rolled with that because if you're going to put something big like that in there, I'm thinking, okay, well, this is going to be significant later in the story.
Well, I mean, I don't know why you would think that, because like the flying hover bikes, where they weren't a main part, but they were just there.
Sadly, and that was another beef I got. You're going to ride it.
Yeah, that's the one little quibble.
Not a quibble. It's just like it's part of the landscape.
I mean. Something else, like dealing with the bike, is a quibble of the film itself, but we'll get to that.
The other thing, so if you're going to put telekinesis in there, make it real. Give me something significant.
Well, they did make it real at the end.
Well, but see, that's not a big deal. I mean,
blowing up an entire house is not a big deal, Carl.
Nope.
Okay. Nope.
Because look. You could have gotten the same emotional impact. Because, by the way, the kid was my favorite character in the movie. So, you know, love the kid. But if the kid had just been a mad genius, like a super genius, you could have gotten away with the exact same storyline, the exact same stuff. Have him just be just that smart, good with gadgets, you know, kind of like a mad MacGyver or something, where he could have just blown the house up with gas or something. You could have gotten away with the same stuff. The use of telekinesis extends the science fiction genre in a way that you want to be more meaningful. And all we saw, we got to see, like I said, that's why I went to the hydraulics. We got to see the cool Cromartie crush scene, and then we got the cornfield flattening. But that was really it with the telekinesis. And, you know, if you're going to put something like that in there, I wanted to be more meaningful.
I think the meaningful part was that they didn't want this guy to become to come to power in the future because he's a crazy person. So we had to, you know, keep his life stable so he wouldn't be going around killing everybody in the future. And I think that was, I mean, like, do you want this kid running stuff? No.
Nope. But when you're bringing in something, you know, each time you extend the genre with some element of something, you know, when you're bringing in some element of technology or some piece of sci-tech or whatever, when you're bringing that stuff in, it's got to like advance the story in a big way, because throughout the entire story, when they're talking about the telekinesis, it seems like, you know, the parlor trick or the small piece of something that, you know, that it, other than him, turns out to be. It's that parlor trick thing that they're doing. And it's uninteresting. Something as cool as telekinesis.
Well, I don't know that you're saying too, to me, what I'm hearing is the use of a cell phone should have been more interesting and been a bigger part of the story when it's just a cell phone.
Well,
so telekinesis is the equivalent of just a cell phone in the future, because everybody, a lot of people have it and it's no big deal. It doesn't have to advance the story, just like a cell phone does not, unless you're, you know, watching some weird movie about cell phones, which they've made it and I've not seen it. But I think it's the equivalent of that. And you're trying to put too much weight on these trappings of the surroundings.
Yeah, but see, it's like an inconsistent kind of thing. Like, is it big or is it not big? Anytime
well,
you
they
try to,
they said it was
to me it was big, but yes.
Well, I mean, I don't understand big then. Like, what do you mean?
To me, it was really big.
Telekinesis is big.
Yeah. Well, okay,
no, so, not telekinesis, but how it turned out in the film.
Why?
Because to me, one of the things I like about what happens at the end with it, with the Rainmaker, is I started having this crazy, like, even seeing it the first time while it was happening on screen, I had this crazy interconnection to Akira, the animated film,
yeah,
and the climax in that movie. Oh. And I thought, wow, this is like, even though it's not on the same scale, I still felt like, wow, this is like the closest I've seen, or at least that I recall off the top of my head, closest interpretation in live action of what basically happens at the end of Akira. And I liked seeing it realized on screen. Even if it wasn't as grand as it is in Akira, it was still something for me to behold, which I wasn't necessarily expecting in the film, except once you get to a certain point, then you sort of are. But early on, I wasn't expecting it. And so it worked really well for me.
I thought it was visually interesting. I thought laying flat a cornfield was pretty. I also saw throwing the car, you know, was kind of cool too.
But the other thing is, I can see it from your point of view.
I mean, I see it too.
To me, it's almost like Neo just being able to fly at the very end of the first Matrix. Like, you know, it's not thing throughout much of the film. It's only at the very end where it's sort of like a tease of the potential of the future. In the series. And I'm not saying that there's going to be continuation of Looper. I'm not saying that at all. But that's where I can see it be angstful for some people, because in a way, it also reminds me of that other Bruce Willis movie from a bunch of years back, the M. Night Shyamalan
experience. Yeah. I thought about M. Night too in this
Unbreakable.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking.
A lot of people, but I haven't revisited that movie in ages, but my recollection of that movie is that I liked it and it's good. And it didn't bother me in that film how many people say about that movie, how it just seems like it's a prequel or a setup for something bigger, which never gets delivered, which I can see how that could be a problem. But I liked it in Unbreakable. You're just getting the tease of some guy who has the potential to be a superhero or something else. But I'm okay. I was okay with that Unbreakable. And with this, it's also a tease of something that we probably will never see in any sequel or anything, but still worked for me.
I guess maybe it's just a personal bias of mine when I'm watching sci-fi stuff, I like for things to stay in a genre, you know, like be tech, be fantasy, be whatever. So if you're going to start stepping across that, to me, I think it just needed to be more significant. But all right, I'll let it go on the telekinesis. Here, just some other random things. I like Bruce Willis a lot, and I'm starting to, and Levitt's actually starting to grow on me. I've never disliked him, but you know, he's really starting to develop his chops. When I saw that they were going to be together in this film, I was really, really looking forward to scenes where they would be together, where they would be acting together, when they'd be doing stuff together. I didn't know, you know, going into the film, how things were going to go. I was thinking maybe, you know, they'd be teaming up, you know, against, you know, teaming up together to do things, or maybe yeah, even, you know, against each other. But to me, it seemed like the chemistry or the dynamicness between the two was totally lost because there weren't that many scenes where they were together. Throughout the whole film, I was really looking forward to either, you know, a really cool bad guy, good guy showdown between them, or them, you know, teaming up to try to solve the, you know, the future or whatever. And there was so little between the two of them that I thought that it felt like a missed opportunity. I felt like, you know, I was robbed of something, because I was like, man, I really, really wanted to see that. And that didn't really happen. So that kind of bugged me.
In film, this is known as the heat quandary, the film Heat, where everyone was dying to see Al Pacino and Robert De Niro act on screen together, we only get one little 10-minute scene out of the entire film where they interact.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Good. There you go. I'll buy it.
You know, I thought was funny is that in the middle of this film seemed like a Die Hard movie. When he was in the, I guess, the brothel in the back with the gangsters and stuff, he just all of a sudden it turned into Die Hard, where he was just popping off shots.
I actually thought he said yippee-ki-yay.
I actually yelled it out loud in the theater because I
thought he said it at one point.
I don't think he said it, but I was just like, what the hell is this? This has turned into Die Hard all of a sudden.
I love it.
And I
was
amused.
That
was
the Judge Dredd moment in the movie.
What?
I loved it because for me that was like the little Judge Dredd moment, the badassery I'm talking about, where someone's almost indestructible for a moment, invincible. I mean,
right. But I liked it, and it was badass or whatever. But it was just, it seemed so jarring to see. I mean, I enjoyed it, but it was a little jarring. Mm-hmm. But
it was jarring for me, but in a good way.
Yeah. So what else, Carl?
Okay, here's another personal bias. This one's you can come after me on, but I'm not a tremendous fan of space westerns, okay, where you've got, you know, science fiction mixed with western, you know, like you know, cowboy
Firefly
stuff. Yeah, and that's what took me so long to embrace. Space Confederates, yeah, I wasn't jumping on that boat right away. So that's, it took me a while. It really, really, and I like Firefly and Serenity in spite of that. That's really, you know, it's the dialogue, it's the characters, it's the, you know, the cutting up. That's what I like about Serenity. Not so much the outfits and the, you know, the raggedy old dusty nature of it. So when we're in the future now and people are rocking six shooters and the blunderbusses or whatever, I'm looking for some cool weapons. Is somebody gonna crack out a saber next? You know what I mean? And not a lightsaber, like, you know, a metal one.
Revolution.
The cartoony nature. The cartoony nature of the weaponry bothered me.
I mean, they were just guns.
It wasn't just guns. It was also the look. You know, there was that Western gunslinger kind of. Yeah, you noticed that, right?
I noticed it.
Yeah, that was a gunslinger.
That can't be the only thing that classifies this as a Western. I mean, they weren't doing no.
They had six shooters. They had like the old pirate weapon. So, you know,
that's the only Western-ish thing that they had, right?
Well, there was a little bit more to it.
Like,
I mean, there was the weapon. No, but I mean, that added to that sensation, that sense.
Because
the guys who were, I can't remember what they're called. Well, they're called loopers, aren't they?
Yeah.
The guys who do the job.
They're like the looper patrol guys.
Yeah, and it's like, they reminded me of like, because, you know, this is like a whole upside-down dystopian world where if you got all those kids who wish they could do like Columbine shootings, if you could just like put them on your payroll and then say, here, you get a lot of money, and then they just go out and buy what they want to buy, like as far as how they want to dress. Because obviously all these guys had that like outlawish WWE Undertaker type of like Western trench coat.
Yes.
But I liked it. I mean, on paper, it doesn't sound like something I would like to see in a film. But in execution, worked out. And the other thing, too, in the future times when Bruce Willis's character gets taken away from his wife
those enforcers, whatever they were called in the future, they had that whole man with no name,
yes,
big brimmed hat, but they also had, looked like a combination of that. And they also had this Kung Lao Mortal Kombat thing going on.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And I was like, this is kind of cool, like, just stylistically. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I felt those Western... And then there was just this Western attitude of bounty hunters and going out to, you know, be, like, mercenaries and
I'm just like, you know, if you look at the weapons, I was bothered by the weapons because they had that throwback feel to them, and it made them less interesting. You know, if I'm going to be seeing some weapons, you guys are from the future. Give me some semi-automatics. Give me some, you know, beams or something. You know, for it to be a space shotgun going against a space six shooter. You know, that really, like, and the guy had the bullets. You know, like, you know, like Han Solo. Well, not to, it was actually Chewbacca Wookiee, but the, you know, the bullets worn across his shoulder and down around his waist. So he's got bullets in it. And there's that scene where he's talking to his boss, and he's about to get literally fired, and he takes his gun, and you see it's got the big six shooter, you know, chamber in it, and he puts it down. So you know, again, it's like the juxtaposition of the future, the retro past, you know, and I also would have been all right if there had been a diversity of era, you know, like hunter eras, where if it had been, you know, a little Asian in there, had been Western, had been something that was sort of maybe, you know, pirate or some, if that had been, but everybody was Western except Gordon Levitt. He was like, you know, Max Headroom 80s, remember? He had rocking his feet. What was it? Fiesta?
At least they made, yeah, at least they made note of it, though. At least they spoke to it in the film. And right now, I'm just going to call this throwback gunfighter thing in the future, I'm going to call it Gunpowder Punk. For now, because I think it is pretty cool, and it's nice. I mean, I hesitate to go there because some of us have been joking offline recently about steampunk and all that.
I like steampunk. I like.
Well,
steampunk.
I did
this
like it
is
until
not steampunk.
Well, steampunk to me, it's almost how I look at hipsterism. Like it was cool at first, but then once everyone became self-aware of it, it instantly became not cool for me. Steampunk, that is.
This ain't steampunk.
Oh wait, no, it ain't. But that's why I'm calling it gunpowder punk because it is this. I mean, because it is illogical, kind of like as Carl's saying, like we're in future times, and yet why are we looking to the past?
Yeah, but they're like, in future times, and they still got crappy cars. They have like they had like weird cars with they were outfitted with.
Yeah.
I mean, so I think that it's just a combination of the old and the new. And yeah, why wouldn't they have these guns? Like, why wouldn't they have these guns? Because they shoot. Because they're only supposed to shoot and kill people. They're not supposed to be fancy, and that's how that it looks very utilitarian. If you want to use it in that fashion.
Yeah, I'm no cosplayer, but I did kind of like. Those guns were a bit unique. The ones that the Loopers actually used for their jobs.
Which one? Because there were the two classes. There were the six shooters, and then there were the blunderbusses.
Yeah, I guess the blunderbusses is what they're called.
Okay, they were a big stick. They were a stick.
I know.
They're only supposed to shoot, though, Carl. They're not supposed to be pretty. Yeah, that was the whole point of this whole movie. Nothing was really pretty.
No, it is pretty. That's why they were retro. That's why they were retro was because they were supposed to be art.
But I just
like
that large cylinder like look and you know they explain like the pros and cons of it of that particular type of you know weapon and I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was a nice little touch.
It didn't bother me.
Yeah, but and of course you know the overarching theme of why they were doing the time travel kind of bugged me too. That, you know, the whole reason that you're going to use time travel is to effectively dispose of bodies.
Criminals are using it for that reason.
Yeah, but, you know, if I'm a criminal and I got a time machine.
You're going to go kill Hitler, aren't
look,
you?
Look, I can come up with something better than disposing bodies to do with a time machine. You know,
didn't that time machine look like from 12 Monkeys when he got
sure
it?
Sure did. Yep. I was getting flashbacks right away when he got in that thing.
I wanted to see 12 Monkeys so bad.
But within the framework of the story, I could kind of see, like, logic within this artificial world of how, I mean, especially when you see what you were talking about earlier about using torture in the present to, you know, torture someone in the future, you could see if things are that instantaneous, because it's the same thing that happens in Back to the Future with Marty, except instantaneous rather than him fading out of a picture, if we take that as real, that's incredibly scary for any organization, whether a crime organization or a legitimate organization, because there's just so much that can go wrong if the wrong person gets a hold of this technology.
So my question, well, why aren't they taking out kids then? Because, I mean, the recycling all these old dudes' bodies, you know, throwing them after they're all grown up and caused the trouble. If you got a time machine, why aren't you doing like Bruce Willis was doing, taking out kids early on to keep them from becoming the people that you're worried about in the future? Well, why wasn't that going on instead?
Because nobody, they said they weren't forward-thinking people.
Well, okay. But also at the same time, I mean, that's sort of like what's going on. I mean, we're actually seeing the first person getting that idea. You know, you're saying, why don't they do that?
All of those bodies, that he was the first one to think of that?
They said that they were not thinking people.
Again, trying to take it seriously, pretending like it's real, it seems like, because everyone was too afraid of that in the first place, and now someone's going to take it into their own hands, I guess for the first time. This is the result of that, or what we see play out.
Okay, all right. All right, I know. Well, so it just, you know, to me, the movie, it just felt so fractured. I mean, with time travel, I really do like time travel. And like I said, when I sat down, my brain hit record, and I'm paying attention to the details, because just like with 12 Monkeys, just like with Back to the Future, hell, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, as you're paying attention throughout the film, you see moments and hints where the film loops back on itself, where the characters see themselves. And you know, it's fun to pick that kind of stuff up. That didn't really happen, you know, in Looper, not to the consequentially, you know, relevant scale that it has in all the other time travel movies. I mean, granted, you know, how Joe dies is, you know, is a big neat bow that ties things up pretty neat. And you know, and I didn't quite see that coming, but you know, for the movie to be about time travel, they could have done so much more really interesting stuff. Like I said, that real-time torture, that was cool. And I was so sure we were going to see more of that throughout the film, and more use of the time travel as a weapon like that. That didn't quite happen.
Yeah, I know they kind of showed how they used that there, and that was a little bit interesting, but not, obviously they didn't use as much as you wanted them to. But the other thing that I found somewhat innovative for this genre, the time travel genre, the part I really liked to see on screen was the way they explained how it is that Bruce Willis, is the older version of Joe, got himself out of this situation. You know what I mean? Like his whole escape and like how that actually went down. And they spent about, I don't know, 10 minutes or so on screen kind of catching the audience up.
Mm-hmm.
I really dug that. And it's not the kind of thing that off the top of my head I could say or point to in one of those other popular films of this time travel genre. And so we got major bonus points for that.
So you just mean when they, you know, jumped out and they went into his life in the future and showed, you know, how he aged and what he'd been through, his lovely wife or, you know, girlfriend or whatever. You're just talking about the parallel story and then how he
jumped. But it wasn't just that, but it was that, because you kind of assumed, oh, this is just how it happens. He appears, oh, there's no hood, he just turns around and then runs away. But no, it didn't just happen, because what actually happened is he appeared and Joseph Gordon-Levitt killed him. But now we get to see the rest of the story to catch us back up with the present. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, okay.
You know what I mean? Like, so in other words, it's like if we were watching Back to the Future and we go, oh crap, in this version, Marty gets killed, or it actually doesn't go right, but now here's how it really turns out, you know, going further on. It's just, I don't really recall seeing that in such a way in any time travel franchise.
I'm concerned about that because he did kill him once.
Yep.
Yeah, heck yeah, yep. He did.
Yep. So then how does it work?
Because, yes, he did. He did exactly what he was supposed to do. But now, because of that, Joe's own future will now be changed. Because now we have to follow through. And he grows older, but now he has now this version of him has the knowledge of him killing himself and knowing it. It's paradoxical for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow, okay. I didn't get that because... Oh, okay, wow. All right. Okay.
So yeah, first time he actually kills
So what
him.
Was I watching the whole time?
They were being sneaky and showing us the second iteration first.
Oh, Joe, yeah, yes, that's right. That's right.
Okay.
And then they showed us, oh, but this is what really happened the first time. Mm-hmm. And see, it's not exactly what Carl was saying. Like when you see a character like go back and like see their own life from a different perspective because they're hiding around the wall or something around the corner. Mm. It's not exactly that, but it's a different play on that for me.
Yeah, that was well done. I'll give you that. You know, because so we got to see the darker, corrupted Joe, you know, the one who had killed himself, live, you know, throughout the life that was the Bruce Willis's life. And then at the end realize, oh, crap, I gotta stop this. But the fact that we see him leapfrog over it like that is pretty cool. So that was interesting from a time travel perspective. But
I can't wait to see this again.
Oh, me either.
Hey,
sure.
Is this one of the movies? I hear that the director created what do you call it? The sound, the alternate soundtrack, the narration, the director's notes as an MP3 file. You can carry it into the movie on your iPad or iPhone,
what?
And then listen to his commentary while you watch the film. So I think I think he did that.
I'm glad you brought him up though, Rian Johnson, because I had to do a lot of retroactive learning on him after seeing the movie. And first of all, one of the things I like that I saw out there on the interwebs was there was a fan question asking, are we going to see a director's version of Looper at some point? Mm-hmm. And I like Rian Johnson's response to that fan inquiry, which was, yeah, absolutely. It's the one playing in theaters right now. So check that out. But Rian Johnson, who I didn't know anything about until seeing Looper, and like I said, I had to go back and look. I was definitely getting this kind of Christopher Nolan vibe off this guy. Meaning, even though the first film of his, I kind of got this sense that this is one of those Artur-like directors who, if you see more stuff, you're going to see these like similar tropes. Like you can just tell, oh, this is a Christopher Nolan movie. Oh, this is a Rian Johnson film. And so he only has two prior films. And thus far, I've seen the first of those, which was Brick from 2007 or so. 2006, 2007, which starred a very much younger looking Joseph Gordon-Levitt in the title role of that film as well.
Okay.
Except he still looks like a high school kid in 2006, 2007. And definitely, I mean, if you know what I mean, when I said about Christopher Nolan, whether you look at Batman or you look at Memento or whichever movie of his you choose, there's just that Christopher Nolan-ness. Yeah, there's a certain Rian Johnson-ness because movie Brick is not at all in any way a sci-fi film whatsoever, but and it's also, I'm just gonna say, it's not gonna be everyone's cup of tea, so I'm not saying you guys would like it if you saw it, Brick, but what it is, it's a high school movie, meaning you know high school kids getting into high school drama, but it's not like that genre at all, in that it's all presented as like a noir. Everything's very dark and heavy, and even though these are all high school kids, they act like they're in their mid-30s and disgruntled and don't act like high school kids at all. I mean, they act like people in their mid-30s attending high school, if that makes any sense, because adults almost don't even exist in the movie. It's just about high school kids who act like adults. And it's all about, oh, you know, you're treating her bad, and oh, someone's been seriously killed, I'm gonna get to the bottom of this. And so it's like surreal, because high school kids, this would never be, but he's just the director, he's just transposing it And so that's what makes it interesting, in my opinion. Again, not everyone's cup of tea, but you definitely feel his stamp on this. Like, you know, it's very, very evident. It has this Looper feel, even though it's completely different content.
Nice.
Christopher Nolan.
I like that he's doing new things. I always like, you know, the new folks coming out. I'm just not feeling it yet. I don't know what the deal is, but Looper still just feels a little disjointed to me. I just
like that about it though. I like, because it's like, this feels really ADD to me, and like he tried to put so much. It's like a designer who puts like too much in their garment. They put like a tuck and a pocket and then some pleats and some ribbing and everything, but somehow it still manages to look beautiful to some people. So I think if there's an aesthetic thing going on here that maybe you didn't appreciate, but I mean, kind of like the way it jumps around.
I mean, the thing that I really like, I mean, for whatever reason, it melded well for me, but the thing I really liked about it, in addition, just like District 9 and Moon, I love movies that have a severely low budget, mm-hmm. but really stretch it like yep. beyond belief.
And
this one really did that well. And as much as I like it, I really think I've seen other critics say as well that I still think Rian Johnson still has his Batman Begins or Dark Knight further down the road in his career. Like, this is, I really don't think this is going to be his high point of films, which excites me a lot.
What's the budget for like Dread versus Looper?
Well, okay, Looper was 30 mil supposedly.
That's the budget?
That's the budget.
Okay.
Dread was 45 for the budget.
So this had less money, had more locations than Dread, because Dread was pretty much in an apartment building.
Yep, yeah, and some of those exteriors.
Right. There was some exteriors.
Which we know were shot in South Africa.
Right.
For the outdoor urban stuff. But okay, that being said, because I said earlier, there was something a bit dodgy in the movie. The one thing that was a bit dodgy that I was like, if they made a special edition, it's the one thing I would fix about this movie, is those hover cycle things, those rocket cycles, because okay, at first I thought it was really clever in earlier in the film where you just see it like, oh, it's broken down or it's just parked somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, okay, but I thought, oh, they're just being clever, just like the original Dewbacks in A New Hope, like they're just kind of sitting there, which is probably smart, you know, as in the case of A New Hope, and so then oh dear. When we saw it in action, I mean, it was already dodgy the first time when Joseph Gordon-Levitt made his escape on one, but at the more climactic part.
You mean through the cornfield?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was that first bit, and that was a bit questionable.
Like, what was wrong with it?
But then what it was really glaring was when Blondie came and was, like, charging at him. Ooh, like.
What was wrong with it?
It was
a prop on a dolly is what it looked like. Yeah, dragging through the cornfield.
It looked like a college production.
Yep.
It looked like a college film that you're going to submit to the little regional film festival. Just that bit.
Damn.
I'm totally with you on that. I didn't even want to talk about the jet bike. for a variety of reasons. First of all, okay, so the jet bike, I was getting flashbacks from Attack of the Clones was my first problem with it. Just something about the hue and the look of it. The other thing is, you know, he goes back in time and finds the kid there with the telekinetic powers. I was also getting an Anakin flashback with that too. I was like, oh geez, you know, where's Liam going to show up anytime? Just waiting.
That would have made me happy.
I know. I found the one. He's got the Lady Bic to detect him, you know, detect the midichlorians.
Oh no.
So no. Yeah, that was bugging me because I really, that kid should have been Anakin. I really like the kid in Looper. I thought he was dark. I thought he was sufficiently angry. I thought he was, you know, precocious in a way that was interesting and not annoying. He genuinely seemed to be, you know, curious about things and figuring stuff out, you know, when they're down. I really, really liked the kid. But, and like I said, didn't have to be telekinetic. He was scary enough. He just could have been just crazy smart, and that would have been, you know, that yeah. would have fit. But
yeah. Well, it just felt like you said they ended up in a farmhouse, and I wanted to kind of stay in the future
yep.
a little bit. But I mean, I guess it worked-ish, but
oh, and the only other minor quibble of mine, which was a little bit of a slight leap of logic for me, was just like, what are the odds that his call girlfriend, like, what are the odds that her kid is like one of the three or whatever on older Bruce Willis's list? And yeah. what are the odds that Blondie, because he knows that that's like his squeeze, that if he just camps out and just watches her place or whatever, that he's going to show up? Because there's no reason why he would show up except for the fact that her kid just happens to be one of those kids who was like born in the hospital at the same hospital at around the same time as the Rainmaker. That was, unless there's a throwaway line I missed, which is perhaps possible, that just seemed like an alarming coincidence to me.
Yeah.
The fabric of the film. Cause
yeah. Like, maybe they just wanted to use that chick again.
Maybe, but that was the only bit where I was just like, this is a little bit convenient.
Yeah,
that's why I thought that at the end we were looking at three versions of himself, because it seemed like they were tying things up in a weird way to where a lot of things were connected like that. So,
well, I think that's the M. Night
conundrum. Yeah, that is. It was filling a little M. Night.
Bruce Willis again. Where we realized Bruce Willis was actually dead the entire time.
It's true. He was. So now we know. Yeah.
I enjoyed that one. That one I truly enjoyed of M. Night.
That was the only one. Yeah, was the only one.
I attempted on the others.
Yeah.
I was just, because the leaves are turning here in Ithaca, New York, and it's all fall and the leaves are falling off. So I was thinking about that one movie of M. Night where the trees were angry with everyone. And
jeez,
I think that's the one I haven't seen.
The Crap.
Yeah.
That's
The Crappening. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
The one I haven't seen, so.
Don't see it.
You really don't need to see it.
Yeah, it's not. Don't do it. But
all of Wahlberg's lines sound like questions.
Stop it.
Do they? Yeah. You the only one that's got a gun? Yeah, everything sounds like a question.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought Looper was pretty good. I'm just surprised that so many people liked it. And I'm really glad that there was buzz surrounding this film. So
yeah, I was somewhat surprised too, because it kind of seems like the kind of film that you might watch and think, ooh, I really like this. Why can't the world talk about it? Except in this situation, the world did talk.
Yeah, which I thought was pretty weird.
I totally don't get it.
Yeah, and Rotten Tomatoes score is really, really high. It's insanely high.
I know. I feel the elements, pieces of it. You know, and the look of it, by the way, it is also visually interesting.
Yes.
This movie is a visually interesting one. So, you know, no, against them for that. But it's just something about how it came together for me just did not.
Yeah.
Just
didn't. And where I was kind of sold on it, besides hearing all the buzz, and I am very sensitive to buzz, I have to say. But because I didn't like the trailers. The trailers made it look like this is just going to be a rehash of something we've seen before.
Yeah, I could agree with that.
That's what I totally got as the vibe from the trailers. But when I was actually in the theater and watching it, I think I was sold like within the first 60 seconds, because just that, I think it's the first scene perhaps of him just waiting by the wheat field, and just that first person just appearing out of nowhere, and then just the bam, just the instant execution. Like the way, the suddenness of it, the impact of it, I was like, I'm over here.
It felt like Reservoir Dogs or something.
Yeah,
or,
yeah. The immediacy of it, you know. Oh man, I was just, yes, I am here for this, because this this is not like that trailer I saw already in the first 60 seconds.
Yeah, that trailer kind of
Yeah, because they're just obviously trying to sell it, you know, to the mass market. But
yeah, but all it takes is Bruce Willis and Levitt, and then I'm there, right?
And,
yeah.
And also, Kat, you said, like while it was very distracting to me, Levitt's makeup, it was very, because, I mean, whenever it's there, it's like you just can't not look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely had that. But that being said, for me, it really made him look like Bruce Willis a lot.
I agree.
Really?
Yep.
And especially when they had the face-to-face scene. And I was like, oh, my God.
That's like, that does not look like Bruce Willis.
It did. And it was the jaw, and it was the eyes. And I didn't really notice the nose, which was supposed to have been the whole purpose of the prosthetic. But But the jaw and the eyes, and even though the drawn-on eyebrows kind of worked, too. I got that.
Because the nose was totally Bajoran. I was totally getting that vibe.
Yeah, something went right with the nose.
And though he had the drawn eyebrows, I was like, hey, it's just young Bruce Willis in drag. So, I mean, I really see it. It puts it into the play.
Yeah. It does not look like him. I've Googled and I've looked at side-by-side young pictures of Bruce Willis and Levitt with the nose craziness, and I do not see it. He just looks like a crazy guy with a.
To me, it was almost like a spitting image, but
really,
but not spitting image to Bruce Willis in Moonlighting, but just at least, you know, compared to old Bruce Willis.
It could also be that, you know, sometimes impression is motion too. If you look at it in still, it might not be that great.
But it didn't work for me.
But Levitt's movements, just, you know, him moving, it really worked for me. So I saw it too.
So amazing.
I saw it too.
Maybe it's a guy thing.
And I'm such a huge Joseph Gordon-Levitt fan already.
Right.
And he has a certain sameness in his other roles that you can tell it's him, whether it's dark or a lighter fare. But in this situation, I was like, wow, this really doesn't seem like Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
See, which I'm not saying it was a bad thing. Yeah, it's something
it was a bad thing that it wasn't him, because he was so much like Bruce Willis that that's why he didn't feel like normal JGL to me.
JGL.
Because he just seemed very, Bruce Willis.
Well, maybe he just spent a lot of time around Bruce Willis doing Bruce Willis impressions and stuff. Probably. That ought to be good, just to see that.
That'd be nice. Maybe it'll be on the DVD.
Yeah, maybe. Well, yeah, I mean, I just really like JGL now because he's so grown up and he's playing grown up roles and wearing big boy pants. And he just seems so grown up, and I like him as a grown person because his roles before seemed so candy and nerdy. But now he just just dropping the sexy grown man thing down. And I really appreciate what he's doing.
All right.
Okay. Why is that weird? I mean, he's grown up well.
We're glad you're appreciating him, Kat.
That's what? Good. Thin for me. I don't really like the thinness of it. I'm not talking about he's sexy. I want to hump his leg. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying as a person, I like the way he's grown up.
No, I understand. This is what I call the Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, but no, you like her. You want to hump her leg. I don't want to hump.
I'm just saying the way someone changes to where you're like, I am not attracted at all to you. And then one day.
That's all right. Just give him a couple burgers. Cat will be on him.
You call.
Just wait, you know, because you know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen in about, 3 years. There's going to be some role that he's got to bulk up for. You know, now he's like a warrior or something. And Kat's like, I never saw him this way before. Suddenly his acting is just bursting off the stage. I'm like, okay. All right, Kat.
Shut up.
He's matured as an actor. Okay, here we go.
I hate you so much right now.
But, I mean, but
can't just appreciate someone for someone without you saying I want to hump their leg. Just stop it.
He's three burgers away. That's all I'm saying. I'm gonna wait. I'm just gonna wait. Cat ain't gonna be able to control himself.
But as popular as he is now, though, I still think his star still has so many more heights to attain.
And yep. He's coming to Cornell. Yay! All the tickets for his little show thing are sold out, so I'm gonna have to bum rush the show.
Do that. Mm-hmm.
Let's become part of the tech crew. That's what I do. Get into things.
Nah.
I volunteer my services.
But yeah, so this, I'm really interested to see what other people have to say and if they're on par with what we had to say and like regular non-nerds like this. So I want.
I am not a nerd.
Neither am I, you know.
Whatever. And geek, whatever. They don't. I would.
I'm going to watch some football right now.
They have football games. Geeks like football too. Anyway, what I'm saying is I just want to see what like other average normal people would have to say and why they liked it. You know, I'd be really interested to see what they have to say and why it has such a buzz because I don't get it.
Yeah, no lay people that I know yet have seen this movie. And
oh, okay.
I'm really interested to hear what they have to say too. I love the genre of time travel.
Carl?
Am I what?
You still grumbling back there?
No, I was going to say something. I wanted to finish, though.
Oh, okay.
I mean, as much as I love the genre of time travel, this is, and I do kind of like this other movie, but it's so not the time traveler's wife.
No. It's also not the Christopher Reeve version of whatever that was either. So,
what's a lot of time or something? Which, or somewhere, or whatever. But. I mean, I like the time traveler's wife. I don't like it this much, but it was okay. But it was more. I wanted to call it the more conventional time travel movie, in which you definitely do see characters coming back on their lives in non-chronological order and what. But it this is much cooler.
Looper's
way cooler. Again, I like that no holds barred. That doesn't have to be a bloodbath on screen, but just not holding back punches at all, and not trying to, for the most part, not holding the audience's hand. I don't think.
No, there was no hand holding in this film.
Yeah,
guys, let me ask you this: why was this movie rated R?
Tits.
That was it. Jeez, they could have left those out.
Yeah, that is true.
I don't know particularly why, but. It makes sense to me, like, the way the Arcane rating system works. There's definitely a brutalness in this movie, whether it's a particular thing that you can point to or not. There's a certain kind of brutalness that I could just see the rating community just going, yeah, this is R. I mean, even if there wasn't boobies, I still think this could
be yeah, you're a nerd.
Even those things, those funny things that I've never experienced in my life. But but just the tone and what we were just saying about how they don't hold back, I could just see a knee-jerk rating.
Like, yeah, the way that guys got shot in the cornfield, like back-to-back, that had to do it too.
Yeah, I'm sure something about depicting executions in this such and such manner.
Yeah.
There's some clause, like, in the rule book.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, you know, between that and the hydraulic squeeze.
Was it Prometheus recent films that was, like, that close to getting an NC-17 rating? Like, it was right there on the cusp? I think it was that movie.
Why?
Just 'cause. And there has to be massaging going on, like with the producers massaging, like the boards, to, you know, get certain things to go the way they want.
Massaging going on?
No, it's political, is what I mean.
Oh,
I mean.
Oh,
you don't just submit your movie. You don't submit your movie, and they just give you back. Oh, PG-13. No, like the producers Actually, come on, Phil. Come on. No. You guys did this for Willow. We can have this in Prometheus. I don't know where that came from.
I was about to say, I don't remember Willow being that hardcore.
But I mean, there is like bargaining and like massage, like under the table. I'm not saying they give out money.
I thought you were talking about in the film. Now, in the film, this is rated R because of the use of strong violence, language, some nudity, and drug content. So that's the official reason why.
All right. Well, didn't seem like that dramatic to me.
Yeah, no, because we're adults, so.
All right.
Yeah. So, yeah, Looper. So, guys, if you found something in a movie that you didn't see, you didn't hear from us, you know, drop us a line on Twitter. That is at Sci-Fi Party Line. Eric will answer it or forward to me or, you know, however that works. And if you have complaints, you can talk to Carl.
What the? I don't need any more complaints. I got my own complaints about the movie. Yeah. I don't need to hear it. Unless you want to say, yes, I agree 100% with your complaints. Well, then I'll take those.
Charles agrees with everything you say, so he'll be agreeing with you.
All right.
Yes. any last thoughts or any little sci-fi news you want to bring up, guys?
I have something I want to say.
Oh.
I am enjoying a new television show that's not exactly science fiction, but it is, but it's quite epic. It's quite epic, and I don't know when to talk about it, so I'm just going to blurt it out. I like Last Resort.
Oh, it's my awesome. God. Yes. I love that show, too. It's like, I wish it was Star Trek, because it's like, if Enterprise was like this,
I was thinking the same thing, except Voyager. Like, if Voyager just started taking down the whole Delta Quadrant, like, we annexing all of this for the Federation. That would have been awesome.
Oh,
yes.
Eric, are you watching Last Resort?
No, I haven't had a chance because I actually have been trying to sample some new shows, but there's just so much on the table right now.
Well, you've seen the trailers, right? It's a military show.
It is not what you think. When I sat down and watched it, because, you know, I kind of like subs.
Well,
you know,
that's interesting. It's not what I think.
It's not what you think. You're going to sit down and you go, oh, yeah, you know, Johnny's often, you know, he's serving the sub. He left his girlfriend at home, you know.
Don't spoil it.
Look, that's every military movie. That is every military. I'm not going to give away any more than that. So, you know, Johnny's off on the sub.
So it's a Michael Bay production.
You're going, what could happen, right? What could happen? And plus, it's on TV. Come on, this can't be good. Wait till you see. You'll be like,
good. It is so good. I couldn't believe how good
we'll have to see. I mean, like, how I feel about it because I've been very surprised by so many of my friends who really, really like Revolution out the gate.
Oh my god!
And I was not expecting a lot of my friends to have such positive reactions, and so now I'm having to
readjust your expectations. Life.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Because happened?
We ain't your Revolution friends. I'll put it that way. All right.
I will say that they start to answer some of our questions about the ridiculousness of the premise in the second and third episode.
But it's not even just the ridiculousness of the premise for me. It's a lot of it for me is the execution on screen.
Yeah, it's terrible, but I ran out of stuff to watch and I wasn't in the mood.
How did you run out?
I ran out of modern things to watch. I was not in the
watch. That's what I'm talking about. There's so much right now.
Well, the things that I'm interested in, I ran out.
Check out Elementary with Lucy?
Yes, I've watched those. I watched both of them.
Oh my God.
Like I told you, I literally ran out of new things to watch. And so I was like, let me just revisit it because somebody was like, you did just watch the other episodes. They'll explain it. And so I was just like, okay, fine. I'll watch it. So a couple of things happened that I was like, okay, well, you know, when I get bored and I run out of things to watch, I'll watch it.
Well, the crazy premise was not one of my issues.
That was my issue.
No, not for me.
And the generic of it.
Yep.
The genericness, yes. Yep. The premise, no. That was it.
It literally felt like they lifted characters out of Terra Nova, just dropped them down here.
In a nutshell, I would have liked it to unfold what happened just in the first episode. I would have liked to unfold much slower, with more focus on realism and less focus on expedience, I guess. I don't know. A lot of things felt wrong to me about the first episode.
I think the lead character, it's like watching a young Jennifer Garner that has gone to the William Shatner School of Acting.
Ooh, wow!
She has this over-enunciation way of speaking and then pausing. I'm like, stop, just get it out. What are you saying? What are you
Maybe she's Canadian. I'm going to edit that out. But just for this, maybe she's Canadian. Because, you know, sometimes when they, I mean, maybe she's British or something and she's not up on her. That's what I'm saying. Maybe she's foreign. Because usually when
you
they.
You know what would be horrible if she's not? If she's just straight up American. And we're like, well, maybe she's not from America.
That's positive over here. Now I got it.
Well, I mean, since we're.
Being racist.
Standing for a sec. No, I didn't think that at all. But since we're expanding our scope, I mean, can we say anything about Fringe?
Yes, well.
Because you just reminded me of when you were talking about the accent.
Yes, she's from Canada. Boom. I knew it.
No.
Yes, she is.
No. Who are you talking about?
He's talking about Gardner, young Gardner from Revolution.
Yeah, from Revolution.
Oh, I have switched to Fringe. That's why.
Okay, but I just wanted to throw that in there before you got. I was correct in that she was from Canada. Okay.
Oh, because I thought you were saying, because I was about to go somewhere on accents and Fringe or.
Okay, hit it. We'll with you now. Go
on. We're Fringe. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, but because as we all know, I mean, Walter's obviously Australian. I mean, the actor. Anna Torv is for sure.
Dude, we're not talking about nationalities anymore.
What?
Is that where you were going?
That's how you got me thinking about Fringe.
Oh, okay.
Holy moly.
Because I was just like, I thought we were talking about Fringe, so what are you still talking about nationalities for?
Okay, that's just the point there. That was the tie-in.
Oh, okay.
Hey, you got me to Fringe. Because the new girl on Fringe, the one who plays the bishop's daughter.
Right.
I can't even think of her character's name right now. But I was curious just too, like, who is she? And yeah, I guess she's Australian as well. Like, somehow that sort of weirdly fits since the person who plays her mom on screen is Australian. But I also found it interesting that she was heavily considered for the Gwen Stacy role in Amazing Spider-Man.
Interesting.
But obviously lost out to Emma Stone. But I could totally see her, that actress, I could totally see if they would have went that way with Gwen Stacy in that film.
I'm glad they went Emma Stone.
Well, I am too. But had she not been available, I could totally see her in the role as well.
Yeah, but then, like, who is she? Like, everybody would have.
Well, yeah. Well, who is Peter Parker, you know?
Yeah, we knew him from the Facebook movie, and we know Emma Stone because we know Emma Stone, and so they needed two actors on that same level.
Right. I know what you're saying, but I can see.
Okay. No. I guess. I don't know. She seems too quiet, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. Have we all seen the first two episodes? Is that where we're all at?
First two episodes of what?
Fringe?
Yes. So, comments.
Well, first episode, I thought was incredible for very many reasons. Very, very good, which I can get into in a second. But
you can get into a second, but Calder, do you have time for this? Or are you rushed?
I can get you a little time. We can do this.
Okay, because I didn't want to. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. I can get to. But the second episode, though, aside from scope, just felt really back to business as usual. Not story-wise, but from a production point of view. And so that was a bit of a letdown for the second episode, because the first episode had a lot going on. Besides story and revelation, it stylistically, I thought, oh my God, we're going in a whole new direction. Much, much more cinematic looking, the lighting and many other things. Cinematography of the first episode, I got super excited. But unfortunately, I wasn't in the second episode. But
it's kind of like Smallville. Their premieres and finales were always really huge, and then the middle parts were kind of
Yeah, based on only two episodes, you're totally right on with that.
Yeah, well, but that's also the Fringe theme. You know, Fringe has done that throughout the series, where the finales and premieres are really, really big, and then they're kind of quick to go, okay, we got that set, let's go. And, you know, for budget reasons, I understand that's why they're doing that.
Of course, I thought, they have this whole new lighting scheme going on. That was really working in that first episode, which was completely abandoned in the second episode.
I don't know why this surprised you Eric.
That's true.
I mean, again, we have to be like hopping all over the urban future or anything. I'm not saying that at all. And it's fine to be contained in sets and everything. That's fine. It's just with the extra mile with, like I said, lights and other things that doesn't necessarily cost a lot. Takes time for sure, but I mean, it was just like, oh, bother. still good, but wow, they had raised the bar so high.
It was cinematic. You got that right. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't really know what they're doing or where they're going or if it's interesting to me, but I'm still watching and it's the last season anyway, so I'm just, you know.
The other problem that I guess they borrowed from Smallville as well or from comic books or whatever, established in the second episode, is like, oh, so in case nobody knew in the audience, this is going to be our quest this series. And you find videotapes hidden throughout the lens. And it's like Smallville, like when everybody gets out of the Phantom Zone and now we're going to collect our Phantom baddies for the rest of the season.
That was a very simple kind of quest path. But wasn't it? Yeah. That is just a very
especially tapes.
Breadcrummy. Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
great.
As I was cracking on my tweet, you know, I admire Walter Bishop as a man of forethought and vision. So my only question is, why beta? All right? I mean, look, they're like 20 years from now. Can you try to find a beta player now and see how your quest goes? So, yeah.
It almost was like an interactive game that you, like a party game that you buy. All right, let's put in the video. Everybody gather around. Get your gumshoe hats on. Let's do this. Like, oh, really, Fringe?
The clue that you need, and the most important part is... Oh, what happened to the thing?
That's very lost, though.
His brain is already scrambled. You can't tell me you can't even get the tracking right on the beta? This is terrible.
Man. Simple MP3 file, but you know.
Right, yeah.
Stored on a cloud or something.
Thank you, yeah.
I like how mad he was that he had to disassemble the Laserdisc player.
Yeah, that was good, actually.
I felt that.
Really? Oh, Carl.
Yeah.
Oh, so funny.
I mean, I'm with it, and I'm glad they had an additional... Because I know they were prepared to wrap it up at the end of Series 4 if they had to, and it was actually apparent in that series. But, I don't know. It's good, though, that they get these last 13 episodes, and I'm glad it gets to go out with hopefully some type of style or panache.
Or at least some dignity.
Yeah. I think it'll be all right.
So when did you jump back on the Fringe train? Because you stopped watching it for a second.
Yeah, I stopped watching it. I think like the last 8 episodes of Series 3 was where I really started tuning out. And so I only like mainlined what I had missed in the end of 4, like around the time when 4 finished up last year, is where I just took it all in like in one big gulp.
Wow.
That I had missed. And while it's still good, I mean, all that bit as well, certainly it's past its high point for me, which was probably, I don't know, it was it season 2?
Yeah, I think it was.
It's weird, I mean, to think back at it now. But yeah, there was that one season where it just felt like, wow, this is
every really good. Week you were on Twitter squeeing about.
Yeah. But it lost a lot of that when we got certainly to Series 4 when... With the, what was it? So the way I had to try to keep track of it is with the different title sequences. Because when we were doing Red Blue, the first time, that was really cool. But when we started getting into the, what was it, the yellow? Mm-hmm. Like, that's when things are, I was like.
So wait, now help me out because I can't remember this title. I remember the main story part. So are we talking about the parallel universe when they started stepping into the parallel universe?
Yeah, Red Blue was... That was the bulk of season 2. I mean, that's when that was introduced. Was series
okay,
two.
So that was the basic parallel. All right, so what was yellow? What was the yellow?
Yellow was series 4, which was the world that existed without Peter Bishop.
Oh, yeah.
That was
okay.
Yellow, and that was the driving force for series 4.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and that's
Carl, you and I did not sound happy when we recalled that.
Yeah, no, that, like, that, the quest for Peter Bishop, yeah, for all of that time, and you know, just everybody being so sanctimonious and just constantly questing, that was not such a great time.
Because the end of series three, I actually thought was pretty cool when I finally got to it. Mm-hmm. That's the one where Peter first jumps to the future for the first time and sees the wrong world.
Yep.
And it made it seem like series four was going to be like the mind-blowing series where who knows what was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, are we going to get more future world or what? But instead we had that yellow, the world without Peter, which was not at all what I expected after the series three finale. So that's what really like had to like, you know, mute my excitement or my expectations. Mm-hmm. But it's still good though. The show as a whole. And I know I'm always going to remember it as a show I very much liked throughout its entire run, but it's unfortunately going to fall short of things I hold high like BSG or Lost or whatever. Those are still like up on the pinnacle of at least of the last 10 years or so for me.
I agree. Yeah. So I mean, you know, it's just the second episode into Fringe, so I really don't know where they're going or how they're going to tie it up. So I haven't made a judgment on what I think about it just yet, this season, the latest one. What about you, Carl?
So far, I am enjoying it. I'm concerned because the last season, come on, guys, that finale with Nimoy, that finale was not great.
What happened? He just came in and then...
Remember the ship scene where they had to drop through the dimension rip, yeah, to land on the boat, and then there, yeah, was the just that was just, oh.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that.
I didn't want to really talk about it because I do like Fringe. I like Fringe a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, everybody has a bad show or whatever, you know, from time to time. But to have, of course, Leonard Nimoy, who I very much enjoy, and I was looking forward to seeing him on there. To have him with the Genesis bomb episode. No, really. I mean, it was like dark Nimoy. I mean, dark Spock, and he's sitting there, you know, with Moriarty about to build a new world. That's exactly. I was waiting for him to turn out and look out the window and say, "Can I cook?" You know, the very same scene from Khan was coming back. So, you know, for all of the, you know, for us to go this far, for them to bring him back. And for it to have, you know, his plot thwarted on a boat, it just did not do it. All around, there was stuff wrong there. And I guess that's what happens when you try to write, you know, the finale for a series as well as a potential cliffhanger for a new season, that, you know, yeah, something gets lost in there. But that was really not it in terms of what, you know, how that episode should have gone. There was just so much missing. So when I saw the beginning of this new season, I was so excited. I'm feeling better and I'm like, okay, good. The guys are getting back on the horse and everything. But I'm afraid, you know, cause we know this is the last, I want to see something solid in the ending. Don't let me down. You know, I want to see.
And the observers right now are turning into how the Voyager turned the Borg kind of boring. They're making them boring because they're around too much and they're kind of hanging out. And now they seem like stupid stormtroopers that you can just kind of slide by and, you know, stuff like that. So I enjoyed the observers when they were really mysterious and powerful. And now it's just like...
Now they're cranky bureaucrats is, yeah, what it is. They are cranky bureaucrats. You've got the briefcases. They're going and checking into the Prudential building, you know, during the midday. You know, they go home to hose at night. We've seen that, you know. They're clubbing observers, but still, yeah, they need to do something quick. Because you with me, Eric? You all right?
Yeah, for some reason now it seems like Observer, like Mad Men edition or something.
Yes, you know, they need to bring September back to make observers cool again, you know, something. Because something has gone a little. It's heading for the shark now. So,
yeah. Because going back to when there was so much wonderment for me with this series, this is not at all where I ever thought the war, the shadow war, was ever going. it's not. I was never expecting the observers to turn out to be this nefarious, Overlord, like, you know, I mean, oh god, like, I don't even want to ponder any subtext here about these, like, Overlord, like, extremely strict, utilitarian people who just want to pollute our world and destroy our
resources. Very much like V.
V and or many other heavy-handed allegory out there. Like, I hope it's not just that.
Yeah, and we sure don't want it degrading into Techno Red Dawn either. That
I mean, what are they trying to say? Are the observers just, you know, the New World Order when we all get iPhones? Is that what it is? Is that what it is? Because all the devices look a little Steve Jobby to me. Like, you know, like, is that what they're really trying to say with our ultra consumerism?
Yeah, that time torture thing did look a little like a whacked out iPad, didn't it? What was the old one called? iPod. There you go, with the big.
Oh dear.
But it had a big knob on it. The big stood out knob. I guess it was the Samsung knockoff, is what we had.
You've been Samsung.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's almost like, is this entire season being funded by Samsung? Is that
probably? That's funny. Yeah, well, I guess we'll do some more shows at a later day, but we just wanted to get your wet your whistle there about what we're watching and what we love. We didn't really get into why we love The Last Resort, mainly because Eric isn't watching it just yet, but Last Resort, good stuff. Really awesome. Love it. I think everybody would love this show. It has a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. So, that's our show, guys. Go to our website at scifipartyline.com. Leave us comments there. Tweet us at scifipartyline. Message us on Facebook if you like. That's facebook.com/scifipartyline. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
Bye.
I was just going to let her say bye that time.
Oh, okay. Well, you can cut me out if you want. I didn't know what was supposed to happen.
You can say bye if you want. I don't know why Carl decided not to say bye. I want to say bye.
Hey, either or whatever.
You can say bye.
I refuse.
Like, well, I said it already. But
why you don't want to say bye?
I refuse.
This is now because you didn't say bye. This is all going in.
I'm not
going
to do it. They're I refuse.
People are going to know that you refuse to say goodbye to them. They're going to think you're rude.
I'm being contrary because I had a problem with the movies today. That is why. Looper did not do it for me. Dread did not do it for me. I'm just contrary today.
But we got to talk about Friends. You like that? You like Last Resort, didn't you?
Yeah, but I wasn't saying bye for those.
I was going to say, I mean, I hate sounding like Mr. Happy all the time when they're... But then again, like, yeah, I did, you know, poo a little bit on Total Recall Reboot when we did that. So there is that.
Being really tired when we recorded that.
Yeah, but I just hate always, like, I mean, on my own podcast as well. Oh, he's just the guy who just likes everything. Because it's not true. I don't like everything. But these particular things that have come up, yeah.
I can't wait to hear something you don't hate, because I haven't heard any hate in a while from you. I forgot what it sounds like.
Yeah, and you don't need to include this on the podcast since you already ended it, but because I was just going to say, too, like, you know, these two movies were, like, little unexpected gifts for me, the two we just talked about, but, oh my god, there's so much still on the horizon, you know, between now and New Year's.
I'm not really excited about anything. Dear. I do not want to see the fucking Hobbit. I don't want to see any
other. I want to see the Hobbit 100%.
100%. Not even 10%. I want.
Oh God, absolutely 100%.
Like, because I'll just watch Lord of the Rings again.
No.
Like.
No. Lord of the Rings is great.
And I mean, you can just watch one of those Lord of the Rings. You get the gist of the whole thing. You don't need three of them and three more Hobbit movies because they're all the same film.
They're not the same. You
know, they are the same. I only watched my elf that I like.
They are not.
But he gets killed, so.
They are not the same. They're definitely in the same universe, no question about it.
Being an asshole, I know they're not the same.
No, but I mean, they're not a retreader. One isn't a retread of the other. They're
retready.
Not. Well, I mean, I don't know. Have you read The Hobbit? Or, I mean,
do you think I'm going to read The Hobbit? Do you see?
I told you
I'm sick of Middle Earth, and you like, oh, you should read it then. Like,
no, I'm not saying you should read it. I was just asking, have you read it before?
No.
Because, well, I mean, like, well, see, that's what I'm saying. Obviously, you know, if you're familiar with the story, you can't say it's the same because it's not.
I know it's not the same. I told you I was being an asshole.
No, I know. But
I know it's not the same. I'm just saying I'm sick of it. I don't want
to
see
but Hobbit. But even if someone's never read of it or never read it or never heard of J.R.R. Tolkien, just on paper.
I appreciate him. I understand the appreciation.
No, but I'm saying forget that. It's
Carl who refused to say bye at the end of the podcast. I'm being cantankerous right now.
No, I'm saying throw that baggage away. Forget about it.
I like baggage.
But if I just look at it on paper.
It's Louis Vuitton baggage.
I look at it on paper for myself. You know, greatest film series for me in the last 15 years, Lord of the Rings. Okay, love it. I personally love it from top to bottom. Extended versions, short versions, black and white versions. I love it.
I've seen it too many times. So, I'm tired of it.
For that same, I'm not at all there. So same guy, same universe. Give me more. Like, there's nothing in that ledger that doesn't add up for me. It all just adds up to hell yeah. Bring it on. It's not something like Star Wars or something else where I go, oh, or maybe they went a little bit too far. Maybe I'm growing tired. That has never, ever.
That's where I'm at with Lord of the Rings because I was all on it when it first came out and I could watch it 100 times, but I did watch it 100 times and now I'm tired of it. I'm like angry tired of it. Like,
well, I've watched 100 times and I still find new things I enjoy in it. So it like just never gets old. And yeah, definitely to see The Hobbit realized now and to join it all up. Hell yeah. So for it. But
you're going to get there and it's going to be like episode one.
I'm afraid of that. Well, go on, yeah.
No, if it was a story that we'd never heard of, you know, like episode one, which obviously we didn't know until we actually saw it, then I'd probably be extremely concerned and worried going into this. But because the source material is there, it's a lot more.
I know. What were you going to say, Carl? You were afraid of the...
Yeah, I was afraid that it was going to have a prequel curse or, you know, kind of flake out like that. That is my concern. I hope that doesn't happen. But I got to tell you, each of the Lord of the Rings series episodes, when they started, I was kind of into it, but not that much. And I was like, well, let me see where this is going to go. And every time they surprised me, every time there was something new, they did feel different and richer and more exciting. So I'm hoping that they're going to be able to continue that with the new ones. Right now, I'm lukewarm about it because I'm afraid. I'm afraid that it's not going to be that good. So I'm lukewarm. But that's kind of how I went into the other three, though, where they surprised me. They gave me something new every time.
And the other thing.
Even I hate you. I'm going to have to see this thing.
Oh yeah.
I think everyone's going to have to see it. But even if they laid an episode one egg, let's just pretend that they did. I don't think
he'd do that. I mean, I know it's going to be good. I'm just saying I'm being cranky about it.
It was like a questionable story or whatever. As I already said, too, the first time I saw the Hobbit trailer on the big screen, in IMAX, in 3D, even if it's a crap story, it was just such a visual, visceral experience, just the trailer. And so even if this is a crap movie, if I don't connect with the material at all, it's like one of those things like I have not seen a spectacle like this since like Avatar. It's not Avatar at all, but I mean just something that's like, oh hell no. Like it looks like they just had a credit card with no limit. You know what I mean? This movie looks like credit card no limit. Just go to town. Now I know the prequels had that too, and you know, you can debate about the good and bad of it. But even though I don't like the story of episode one and whatever, I still appreciate the prequels, even though they didn't hit a home run. Like, I still like them existing.
Because the first one has Liam Neeson.
Yeah, and I still like to watch the prequels, you know, flaws and all. So this movie is still, like I said, the biggest spectacle film since Avatar, whether a person likes it or not. It's just wowzers. It looks like a storybook that's like come to life on screen. It's incredible. But besides Hobbit, come on, dude. I'm a crazy diehard 007 fan.
Oh, and
it's the 50th anniversary. I couldn't be more wrapped up into this. I've listened to the Adele song like seriously already 30 times. It just came out like 3 days ago or whatever. I'm such a James Bond for me is right up there. In my lifetime, you know, memories or whatever, it's right up there with Star Wars. It's right up there with Doctor Who, Star Trek. James Bond is like right up there for me.
What else are you excited about?
Those are the two. genre-wise, those are the two big ones. I know there's a couple other things before Christmas or before New Year's.
And this Christmas,
we'll be. I don't have anything in front of me because the only other thing, this is not sci-fi, but I am big time looking forward to the Steven Spielberg Lincoln movie. Big, big time.
Is he going to be killing...
Yeah, without the axes, it's just not the same. I know.
So we got Skyfall, Twilight, Red Dawn, Hobbit.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah, I forgot about
Red
that
Dawn.
The highlight business. I mean, highlight. Twilight. The Twilight.
What do you mean? Oh, yeah, you sounded really excited about that. I'm looking forward to The Great Gatsby.
No, I'm looking forward to see the series round out. But
Prada is doing...
I still haven't seen one of those.
Yeah, don't do it. Don't do it. Because I don't want to hear your anger. And it's most likely going to be directed at me. I don't want to hear that anger.
I was pleasantly surprised by the first one.
Dude.
And besides...
Oh, look at the time. I'm sorry. I have to go.
Skyline. That's all I got to say.
I still appreciate the first one because I went in expecting the worst. And it amazingly surprised me to no end. The first movie.
Oh, Eric.
All the other sequels... I think deserve any, you know, disparaging comments anyone wants to give them. Totally understandable. But the second and the third work for me just because I find them extremely unintentionally funny. That's why the second and third I can just watch, like put it on, because there is so much unintentionally funny things to me. There's so many corny lines. There's so much like over the top pantomime acting, weird stuff. So I had this weird like dark pleasure sensation when I watched Full Moon and Breaking Dawn or Eclipse, whatever. The fourth one just... That one, it missed both marks. It missed being good, and it missed being unintentionally funny. It was just, like, unintentionally dreadful is what the fourth one was. And so that one is, that's the hardest one for me to reconcile, if at all. But the first one was good, man!
It was like a sci-fi original.
If it was just a standalone, and it was just that, you go, hey, that was a bit of a twist on the Empire thing.
No.
Well, that's how I feel.
It still looks like a
sci-fi. I thought it was extremely well directed. I thought they had excellent cinematography in the first one. And I thought it fell under my umbrella of really low budget films that try to go really far with. In my opinion, Twilight is a much more successful film adaptation in every way than Hunger Games is a film adaptation of its original material.
Well, yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you because Hunger Games was terrible. What?
Whoa, oh, I wasn't expecting that. But yeah, I just think it's a much better adaptation. You know, I like the Hunger Games source material more.
Yes, I agree.
But Twilight, the first movie, did so much with what it was as a book. There you go.
Your silence amuses me, Carl.
Sorry, I was getting, you know, Revolution Hunger Games crossover flashbacks. I just, my brain had just locked up. I was just not enjoying the crossbow.
Little cogwheel spinning.
Yeah, no, the crossbow action was just bothering me all around. I'm sorry. I was away there for a moment.
I definitely got to switch back to small screen, but you just made me think of it because you just made me think of Hawkeye, you made me think of Avengers, and then you made me think of Arrow.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to check that out, I guess.
I'm going
to
give it a shot. I'm going to give it a shot.
You have to.
Yeah, I think I have to. I have to, you know, being Smallville supposedly in my veins and whatnot.
Are you excited at all about the Silent Hill? Was that good? Did anybody think that was good when it first came out? Because I tried watching it last night, the first one. I was like, I don't know.
I didn't even know there was a first film, or did I? Or maybe I did, and I just blocked it out of my mind.
They kind of feel like the same film. You know, they merge into that whole kind of horror action thing. So, yeah, I think there was one, and they get lost. I don't know. I didn't see
it. Yeah, I blocked the film out, but I only know Silent Hill because a former friend of mine, I watched them play it a lot.
Right.
Oh, so it is a game. Oh,
it is a video game. Yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I never played it myself. I just watched. And that's a whole genre of video games, but it is really scary. The video game, it's ridiculous. the whole being like lost in the dark and not knowing what's out there to eat you and all that, whatever's going on. The game is crazy. but I never seen the first film, and it's not my genre of film.
Have y'all rounded back and seen Ghost Rider: Spirit of Vengeance?
No.
I intend to at some point. I'm in no rush, but
what about Wrath of the Titans? I'm looking at the list.
I'm actually possibly a less of a rush. I think what's her name from Fringe? The girl I was talking about was in Wrath of the Titans.
Oh, okay.
What about what? You were asking about another one, Kat?
What did I just say? Chernobyl Diaries?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, I didn't plan
it. I told you, Chernobyl Diaries, that's the other movie that made up the trilogy that was the Transformers film. There were the three. There was your Moon Crabs. There was Chernobyl Diaries, and then there was one other one. I forget what it was, but there was three.
Oh dear! But anything that's involving finding lost tapes or film footage or anything.
Why don't they stop it with that?
Anything like that, I am so not on board on. I hated the very first Paranormal Activity from the first 5 seconds. It smelled rotten to me. rotten to me, and anything like it.
They're on four now.
I know.
It was decent.
Seeing all the ads about
decent? Which one was decent?
The River.
Oh, God. Don't even start with that crap.
Oh, that's so funny. All right, guys, I'm hungry, so I'm gonna have to let you guys go, but I would enjoy talking to y'all longer, but I'm about to start eating my arm off.
Don't do that, because that'll be the next movie that we don't want to see. So no go there.
I won't. Thank you for your time, guys. This was awesome. I'll let you know when the show's out.
All righty.
All right. Bye-bye.
End of line.